holy God, we are in awe of you. For you hold within yourself the vastness of the cosmos, and yet are as close to us as the breath in our bodies, and know us each by name. We give you thanks for the beauty of this mystery, O God, not only that you are near to us, but indeed that you allow us to draw near to you, and we ask that in this space today, you would send the power of your Holy Spirit to move among your people, that we might draw near to one another once more. For all of those things which we have named aloud, and all of those things which we bear in the silence of our hearts, we ask that you would meet us, bind up our wounds, heal us in our weakness, quench our thirst. Remind us, O God, that in the midst of joy and sorrow, hope and fear, you are with us every step of the way, and indeed we are never alone. For wherever we go, there you are also. And in that hope, O God, send us out as your people, prepared and ready through all the work you are doing in and through us to be your living presence in the world. For God, we are aware that there are places where it seems as if you have never been more distant. In the streets of Nice, among people whose world has forever changed. In Ataturk and Istanbul and throughout the country of Turkey, where political turmoil continues to challenge people's vision of themselves and their place in the world. And for those everyday moments and places, O God, where there are people who, because of the color of their skin or the people that they love or the money they may or may not have, whether or not they are housed, feel as if they have no place to belong. Create in us and in this place a space, room for the holy to be available to all your people. And challenge us, push us, call us to be people who with you create that space in all places in our world and lives. We ask this, knowing that you are able to do all this and so much more. And in the name of your Son, Jesus, who taught us that together we should pray, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Well, good morning, friends. Boy, how good to be here to see such beauty. I'm not used to stained glass windows, being a Quaker. And this music, my gosh, the music. Quakers didn't sing for, well, some Quakers still don't in their meeting rooms. And for our first 250 years, we didn't sing. And then we started singing, the Quakers in my area. But we've been doing that now for probably 70 years. And we feel terrible about it, so we don't do it well. So to hear the choir, and I wish you all would just come to a Quaker meeting, come to my Quaker meeting, and get those Quakers up on their feet and rocking a little bit. My gosh, they just sit there like lumps. Gosh. Well, it's good to be here and to meet kind people. I knew you'd be kind. Every Methodist I've ever met is a nice person. And to finally come to Washington, D.C., which I've never done before. I've never been here all these years. I'm 55, and this is my first time. I was supposed to come here 41 years ago when I was in the eighth grade. And Mr. Johnson, our phys ed teacher, and Mr. Hadley, our school janitor, brought the eighth graders here on a field trip. 619 miles on a school bus, driving straight through from Danville, Indiana. Mr. Johnson and Mr. Hadley taking turns at the wheel. Both of them old men. This was back in the old days when teachers were old, not like today. Old men with the shakes. They just had tremors. The bus twitched all the way here, making all those eighth graders car sick. 13 hours each way. Riding in a long yellow vomitorium. But not me, not me. I avoided that because the month before my parents said, you can either go to Washington, D.C., or we will buy you a Schwinn Varsity 10-speed. Take your choice. And I picked the bicycle. I picked the bicycle. So here I am, and it's about time. It's about time. Seeing things I've only seen in movies, which is exciting. When I was a kid, I watched Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with Jimmy Stewart. I didn't actually watch it with Jimmy Stewart. Jimmy Stewart was in it. I watched it with my dad. And after the movie, he said, maybe someday you'll get elected to Congress and you can move to Washington. And I would go to bed and I would dream about that. I would dream about running for elective office and coming to Washington, D.C. and bowling in the White House basement with Richard Nixon, who was a Quaker just like me, though I don't often point that out. But oh, when we're young, we have all these ambitions, all these dreams, and then we get old and we still dream, but they're unusual dreams. We dream of being naked in public, and we wake up embarrassed and so grateful that it was just only in our imaginations. I had an odd dream not long ago. I've had a variant of it almost all my adult life, but this one involved the house I grew up in, and that I had discovered underneath the house, underneath even the basement, accessible through a hidden passageway, I dreamed of this vast room filled with treasures, beautiful antique furniture and paintings and jewelry, treasures so beautiful they took your breath away. And they went on and on and on. I would no sooner pull aside one valuable than another object, even more beautiful and priceless, would appear beneath it. I would completely forget and dismiss that dream were it not for my lurking suspicion that it had something to teach me. The idea that our dreams might have something to tell us isn't an idea original with me. In the Bible, God often taught people in their sleeping hours things they were too dense to learn while awake. And so I began to think about this dream and wonder about its meaning, trying to draw some larger meaning, because the dream was so clear and so persistent that it demanded my attention. Indeed, it was so real that when I woke up, I was astounded that the room existed only in my imagination. If they ever tear down my parents' old house and find a room like this underneath it, I'm not going to be the least bit surprised. In my adult years, I have dreamed several times of hidden or extra rooms in our house. I don't know if that's common or not. Have any of you ever had that dream where you dream, okay, I'm the only weird one here then, okay. I would dream of hidden or extra rooms in our home. When my wife Joanne and I were first married, we lived in a very small apartment. It was about as big as this area right here. And so I would have dreams about extra rooms, finding an extra room in our house so that I no longer had to sit at the ironing board to write my college papers like Mitt Romney. At the time, when I was having those dreams, I attributed them to my desire for more space, and I dismissed them, even though I had them fairly often. And then I had this dream not long ago, the one I described, and when I woke up, I not only remembered the dream, I understood it. I understood it. After all these years, I understood my hidden room dreams. Let's imagine, metaphorically, that we all have rooms in our homes we don't know about. They represent the unexplored areas of our lives, doors we've not yet opened, rooms we've not yet used. They are those dimensions of our lives we've not yet developed. Most often, they are spiritual dimensions. All the other rooms in our lives have been lived in. The relationship room, the vocation room, the financial room, the family room, the education room, the play room, the emotional room. Rooms most of us inhabit with some degree of familiarity and expertise. But then there are rooms we've not explored as deeply. Perhaps we didn't realize they were there. Then one day something happened and a passageway in our lives opened and we found ourselves in a room we didn't know existed. I think this is what happens when we become spiritually alive. In 1892, in the Quaker magazine, The British Friend, there was a man named George MacDonald, who was a poet and a Scottish preacher. And he wrote this. He wrote, "Never tell a child he has a soul. Never tell a child he has a soul. Teach him that he is a soul. And that he has a body." Perhaps the day we become spiritually alive is the day we realize we are not bodies with souls. We are souls with bodies. We enter a dimension, a room of our lives we didn't realize was there. It is the room where the Holy resides, and it is in each of us. It is a room with treasures so achingly beautiful, one can only gasp at its loveliness. And this beauty goes on and on and on. We no sooner pull aside one treasure than another treasure, even more stunning and priceless, appears beneath it. We first enter that room for a variety of reasons, motivated by different circumstances. The death of my closest friend by a drunken driver when I was 20 years old first brought the room of the holy to my attention, and when I entered it, I found the treasures of peace and comfort. I have a friend who entered the room of the holy when her first child was born. And in that room, she found the treasures of awe and joy. Another friend found that room when he was 14 years old and his father had a massive stroke, which left him paralyzed. His Episcopal priest came to his home and said, "Let's go to the hospital and see your dad." And so they went. And the boy entered the room of the holy and there found calm and quiet. I know a woman who, when she was just a little girl, went out to a field and reclined on the ground underneath an oak tree and studying its sprawling, spreading branches, she entered the room of the holy and there found the gift of creation and wonder. I know a woman whose mother and father carried her into the room of the holy every Sunday morning, a room much like this one. And though it took her a while to realize what kind of room it was, she eventually became aware of its beauty. I know a man whose wife left him after 41 years of marriage, just went away. And he entered the room of the holy broken and devastated, and in that room found the treasure of healing. My father is an alcoholic. He attended his first AA meeting drunk. He staggered into the room of the holy. He didn't realize at first where he was, but he returned the next evening and the evening after that and still struggles. But he's finding his way into that room whose treasures are acceptance and sobriety. A woman told me she found the holy room when she was 5 years old, hiding in the bedroom while her parents fought in the living room. And in that little room, she discovered the gift of tranquility. One lady I know found the room of the holy when she was 9 years old, and a stray dog, its fur matted with filth, came to her doorstep. And her father said to her, "Yes, honey, you can keep it." One man told me he found the holy room the day he turned 17. And told his mother and father he was gay, and there found loving acceptance. I know a nation, who for centuries bore the double curse of racism and violence, whose citizens plagued with violence, apathy, ignorance, and fear, worshipped at the altar of weaponry. After much sorrow and soul searching, that nation entered the room of the holy and there found equality, justice, and peace. We can dream, can't we? We can dream. Some people sense the room of the holy but are reluctant to enter. So remain unaware of its treasures. They stand near the door, but never cross the threshold. Sadly, they are often the same people who claim to know the room of the holy the best, who peer around the corner, catch a glimpse of it, then take it upon themselves to tell us who is in that room and who is not. But this room is in all people. There is not a Jewish room, a Muslim room, a Buddhist room, a Hindu room, or a Christian room. It is simply the room of the holy, and it has many doors. There have been persons throughout history so gifted at showing others this holiness within. Their names are remembered long after their time among us. Think about them. Confucius, Jesus, Muhammad, the Buddha, Michelangelo, John Woolman, John Wesley, Harriet Tubman, Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Mother Teresa, Elie Wiesel. And there are some still alive, still walking among us. The Dalai Lama, Malala Yousafzai, Stephen Hawking. You don't have a soul. Don't let anyone tell you you do. You don't have a soul. You are a soul. You have a body. You become spiritually alive when you realize that. When you enter a lovely and holy room within, you never knew existed.